NBA basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. Man, it feels good to say that. Before, we were just saying NBA Banter Podcast because we really didn't know what was going to go on when we were talking NBA down the stretch of the spring. But anyway, welcome back to the show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to break down everything to do with the NBA bubble. But really, it's a playoff preview. Not everything is set 100%. We have four teams going for two spots, really. I think they're going to play that on Saturday, I believe. But the playoffs are here regardless. It really doesn't, you know, whoever gets in that A spot will be whoever. We can debate and argue if Portland or whoever will beat the Lakers in the first round, but it's basically set. So we're going to discuss, well, the playoffs, yes, we're going to get to that, but we're going to start with just some takes from the bubble. If you listen to Bill Simmons or some other quote-unquote NBA, you know, experts, I've heard them say that instead of just three teams that really legitimately healthy anyway have a shot to win it. That's kind of what everybody kind of felt, you know, going in to the season kind of, but just in general coming down the stretch of the season. And now he's talking about 7 or 10 teams, 10 separate teams have a legitimate shot based off what he's seen from some teams like Portland and whatnot, or some other teams too. I shouldn't just put, you know, talk about Portland, but the fact that they've played so well and they're coming together. And if you look at Denver with Michael Porter Jr. now standing up like this. And so there are plenty of things that we'll talk about, plenty of storylines that people have been talking about when it comes to the NBA bubble. So we'll start with that. Like I said, there's been some impressive performances. Damian Lillard, the last two games have just been silly. So we'll kind of work our way through the bubble a little bit, but we'll also then kind of sink our teeth into these first-round playoffs because some funny stuff. I mean, even like the Houston-Oklahoma City thing is just – it's crazy that that's how they turned out, considering, you know, what happened. That Westbrook joined the team and Chris Paul's over there. So we're going to talk all about this. But if this is your first time listening to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives. It's basically the headquarters to find all of our shows that we do. But if you want to listen to this show and you don't want to go to Blog Talk, you know, to download it or listen to the browser, you can find this show under the Ropeadope Radio Podcast at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, it's football, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. And one quick note, if you're thinking about cutting the cord you have and you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. The plans start as low as $55 a month. There is a 7-day free trial. No annual contract. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. And right now, there is a 30-day HBO Max free trial with the deal. There's also another part of the deal for AT&T TV Now Max. Okay, that includes HBO Max, period. And then there's one free month of Showtime as well. So that's AT&T TV Now. Like I said, they have the HBO Max free trial for 30 days. And that upgrade from the start of the plans at 55, you can go up to the AT&T TV Now Max, and that will give you HBO Max and a free month of Showtime. Anyway, let's go ahead and bring in my co-host and, you know, see how he's doing. We've had a variety of things go down in the bubble. Portland has stood out. I mean, Phoenix, too. There are other clubs, don't get me wrong. But obviously, Portland's really stood out. Damian Lillard, you know, 51-61 in these last couple of games. He also had like a guy like Gary Trent Jr. or some other stories out there. I mentioned for Denver, Michael Porter Jr., Memphis struggling. We've had a variety of stuff go down like this, and we're going to talk a little bit about it. But in general, how have you been enjoying the bubble? I mean, we didn't really know what we were going to get for product, especially the first couple of games. I think the fact that they were able to bubble kind of in their cities, get some rust off, have like a mini camp, and then have these games, I think they're all ready for the playoffs, man.
Yeah, I think this has turned out just really well. You've had games all day, so as a fan, you can't say, oh, they're only, you know, a game a day. This sucks. Like, the quantity of NBA basketball has been really good. Knock on wood so far, the quality hasn't gone down. I mean, this, you know, these guys are super fit, but 8 games in 13 days is something they would pretty much never do in the regular season. So, you know, that's a little more wear and tear, but again, the injury bug hasn't really hurt anyone. And the games have been just enjoyable. And you've had, like you said, a lot of great storylines come out of the West. So as a fan, I mean, unless you're like a Wizards fan and thought your team could sneak in, like, there's really not many negatives. They've had the virtual Zoom fans in, which I think at first people were kind of like, well, this is kind of weird, but I've not heard any negatives. Again,
right.
These are just fans essentially on Skype watching, and you know, sometimes you get people dressed up in costumes or a baby. Like, it seems kind of cool. Like,
or Shaq, you know, yeah. Or whatever. Yeah.
So that seemed to come off as a plus. The only thing that was scary at first was it seemed to be there was tons and tons of fouls being called. And that was like leading to free throws being shot at like 10 more free throws per game than the regular season,
right.
Which was a little tough because I think, you know, as people said, the refs hear the slaps, they hear the mouse, they hear more and see more stuff. And I think that when you were having teams shooting, you know, 42 free throws and 38 free throws a game, it really does kill the flow. But since the first week, now I don't know if Silver said something or if the players have just gotten their rust off, the crazy fouls have kind of gone down too, you know. And I mean, I love the NBA, and I mean, if you love betting overs, free throws are fun. But it did seem like, okay, the refs are calling too much. But I think part of it might have been everyone's kind of getting back into the flow. So, yeah, my biggest complaint was the refs calling too much earlier. And I think that's even gone down now. So there's really not much bad to say about how this bubble's turned out. And I got to give props to Silver, because when all this pandemic crap has happened, he's been a leader of an organization, and not a lot of leaders in our country can say this, has handled this pandemic incredibly well and hasn't said something stupid. He hasn't, you know, turned this into political debate. I think he's done an incredible job, and it's paying off now from his decisions and the players too. To have a well-run sport where we've not had any tests and everything has just gone really damn smooth.
Yeah, it really has, dude. I mean, they haven't had even a positive test since late July. They're even getting to the point where they can start to bring in folks from the outside, which is something we knew that was going to happen. We just didn't know exactly when it was going to happen. And it is kind of funny, though. I do like the wording. This is from Wojo. Here's who isn't eligible to come in. The bubble as a guest per memo. Any individual the player has not previously met in person or whom the player has limited in-person interactions, for example, known by the player only through social media, which tells you a lot what they're saying. Hey, I realize there's a lot of hot Instagram models. I get it. I also realize that you can message them, but you will not have them be flown in from any place. But that's pretty funny. But you're right, though. Overall, it's been better than we could have imagined. It did make sense, Vegas, or what they're doing here a couple months back when we were talking about this. It made sense. You could tell that they were really being strict about it. And the NHL as well. We got to give them props because they made two bubble cities for each league, which that's worked as well. Very, very well. So kudos to those leagues. We've seen what happened. What's happened. Hopefully it's okay, or maybe they may have to kick a team out or whatever. But we've seen the Marlins. We've seen St. Louis. We've seen some issues with the MLB and whatnot. But and hopefully the NFL, the players, really that hits home to them. Like, okay, wait a second. We're not in a bubble like the NHL or NBA. So we really got to, you know, keep our shit together. But either way, like you said, it's been great. It really has. And it was kind of weird the first – It kind of just felt like a summer league game, to be honest with you, in Orlando, where they play in the facility a lot of times. I think it felt like that, not like in Vegas, because Vegas actually gets a crowd and whatnot. So it kind of felt like that. I was wondering about the sneakers and all that. You're right about the sounds of the sneakers, obviously. You're right about the slaps that you don't hear with a crowd and all that. That was I'm glad you brought that up, because that was an issue, but just digging into these 10 games, this chunk of games that have gone on. Obviously, Memphis and New Orleans struggled down the stretch. The Suns, I mean, have they shown something? That one-handed fadeaway by Booker, but you got like Mikal Bridges, Cameron Payne playing great, like. The Suns, before we get to Portland and whatnot, have the Suns shown a lot of promise just based off this little stretch of hot play, to the point where, like, hey, let's keep this all together and try to build what we got of this young core? Because it seemed like not a whole lot of people were talking about them other than this team sucks, they need to blow it up.
You know, they were a 200-1 ticket going into the bubble to make the playoffs. So, wow. I mean, and you're going to need a Portland loss tonight, because it looks like the Suns are going to beat Dallas today. They've been up by 20 pretty much the whole game. But yeah, a 200-1 odds. So they basically, you were saying like a 1% chance. And I'm not super shocked. I'm like B average shocked, because I've always been a fan of Devin Booker, and I think that this is really shown, and grand maturity with him too, that the dude's really effing good. Like, there's been games where he's taken over where literally he does go to the free throw line, and that's not just refs calling fouls. It's because almost no one can guard him off the dribble. I mean, unless you have like a playoff Kawhi or playoff LeBron or like Iguodala phase back in the day, like the dude's super hard to guard. And when the teams needed him, he's just gone to the line, and he's averaged probably close to 25 a game. And he's really kind of carried the team. Like, I know that Aiden's a young star that can grow up, but I don't think he's still completely reliable. And I know you got like the veteran point guard in Rubio, but I don't think he's, you know, quite the player he was. So, I mean, you really got Booker and some old vets and some young guys, but no one really is jumping off the table. So I think Booker's just really put on a hell of a show, like Lillard, but I think Lillard's got some more people with him. But, dude, the Booker thing has just been awesome. He's put himself on the map, because, in all fairness, if you're an East Coast media NBA writer, you're really not covering Booker much. Like, you know, the Suns aren't obviously a great team. They're not on ESPN much. So if you were the regular, let's just say, 76ers or Celtic fan that really lives in your own team bubble and only cares about the East, you know, the regular NBA fan has really probably found out, hey, like, this Devin Booker kid's pretty damn good. And yes, if you are a Suns fan, this is encouraging, because you're still going to get a pretty nice draft pick. You have a young team. You have a coach who appears to be gelling well. So, yeah, I'd be incredibly optimistic. Now, again, if they go 8-0 today, which they probably will, and they miss the playoffs because of Lillard, like, that is tough. But you got 8 more games of experience in. You got some more exposure, some more team chemistry and growth. Like, you got to be happy, because Booker's in a good situation, and Ayton has the body and the build to potentially be a really good big. So if you give yourself one more person there to join, then now you kind of have your own triangle three. Like, okay, like, Suns might make the playoffs next year, or it's a good chance. And when's the last time we've entered a season, Chris, where we said, oh, the Suns can make the playoffs in the West? Like, that's not been said for, I would say since the Nash and Dragic and, you know, Amari team, or almost pretty close to there. Although I guess they had that one crazy year. But yeah, it's optimism for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I've been pretty impressed, man. Just watching them a couple of times and just paying attention to them. Like I mentioned, Mikal Bridges stands out as a player that, you know, definitely a solid defender.
Speaking of Mikal Bridges, so this is a pretty funny story about myself. So the Suns, if you saw it on Twitter, the last game the Suns played, they had like the organization had every family member do like a personal video to introduce the players. Like the starting lineups were done by all the players' family. And so they get to Mikal Bridges, and it's like this, I would say, fairly attractive woman, like lipstick on everything, and like says his name all nice and slim. Like, holy shit, like Mikal Bridges has a pretty hot wife. Turns out that was his mom. So we're in our group chat. I'm like, holy shit, man, Mikal Bridges is, I was thinking in my head, like, damn, Mikal Bridges has a smoking hot wife. And then a couple minutes later, my buddy's like, damn, see all the sons dogging on Bridges for his hot mom? I'm like, what? Okay. Dude, Mikal Bridges' mom, if she's single, my God, that was pretty funny. So I was like, mom, I was going wife or girlfriend, but she looked pretty good for her age. I'll just say that.
yeah, for sure. That's funny. And Cameron Payne and Rubio, kind of a combo guard there, has been working out. But I do think Monty Williams and just in general, that it is looking up for them, no doubt about it. Obviously we got to get to Portland. No big surprise here, but Damian Lillard is a pretty good player. 50, like what, on Tuesday he went for 61. He went for 51 in the game before that. And it was coming off of, you know, that he did miss what, two free throws down the stretch where a lot of people all of a sudden gave him shit. And he went off and he's like, oh, I'll just put up 61 then. But he has been, I mean, he's had some like video game numbers, especially in the bubble, but just in general, him in general. He's really put it together. There's a stat here that where'd it go? Oh, there it is. So most 50-point games in a season since the merger, 76-77. 5 50-point games this season, and Harden has 5 of them as well. A couple of years ago, Harden had 9 in the 18-19. Kobe's on there twice as well. But, I mean, this – so it's the tied for 9th in NBA history. But Lillard is just – I mean, this freaking guy, he's been going off. And, you know, when you look at – like a Gary Trent, actually. Gary Trent Jr., not to just bring up a Minnesota kid, but if you look at his, like, three-point range, here's a little stat. Trent was the only player in the bubble to make at least 30 three-pointers in the first 7 games, and he actually made them more frequently than Lillard just by a tad. You have a skinny Carmelo, which is what everybody's calling him now. They did tweak their lineup minorly when he replaced Zach Collins, I believe. In general, I mean, okay, let's say Portland. Just talk about Portland a little bit because they have been looking damn good. And also, you know, there has been a little speculation that the Clippers – I remember – who was it? Somebody was watching the live game with the Clippers and – was it Portland? Because it was like they're trying to lose to Portland because they want, you know, they're trying to lose to Portland so Portland gets the 8th spot. Should now, based off what we know about the squad, but especially the last chunk of games with Skinny Melo, do we really think, hey, in this bubble – no, home or road games. Can they actually pull up this what would be a major upset over the Lakers? They still got to get in, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to assume that they'll take care of business against the Nets. I just think that they're – yeah. So let's say they win. Okay, here's what I'll say. And I've bet the Lakers a couple of times, so obviously I'm a little bit biased from losing money. But realistically – I do think that the losing the Avery Bradley and their who is the other guard? Was it Rondo, right? Rondo? The
Lakers, but I believe they're going to get Rondo back, but not for this, though. They'll get him back later.
I do think that there has been an issue of literally their guard play. Now, okay, I realize that LeBron can do LeBron things, and Anthony Davis is a freak. But strictly for guard matchups, unless you're having LeBron guard Lillard or McCollum, I do think that from how the Lakers have looked, the Portland has a legit chance. Because the Lakers offense has had, I think if you like forget about the freaking Wizards, because who gives a shit? The Lakers offense has gone down like massively in NBA, like offensive points per unit, wherever the hell the new stat is for offense. You know, it seems to change every year, but the Lakers have dropped like 9 points in their offense. And just as you mentioned, when the season was going on, they were having a hell of a game. I remember watching the Lakers beat the Clippers like one of the few days, I think it was 3 days before the massive lockdown. So whatever flow they had, and again, give credit to Avery Bradley and my Tar Heel Danny Green apparently can't shoot threes anymore. But this is not looking like the best team in the NBA. Like, again, I completely get that LeBron can do shit and could really shut me up, but they just haven't looked good. And their offensive numbers, which you – I mean, unless you're going to say, hey, the Lakers were just mailing it in, getting ready to turn on the light switch, like, which I don't think is completely true. They just – they've really if you're losing 9 points, Chris, in an offensive statistic, when most teams in the bubble's offense have gone up, I think that is a reason for concern. And again, unless you put LeBron on Lillard or McCollum, which I doubt he probably wants to do to start series, I do think they have an edge in the backcourt. Now, with that being said, Anthony Davis is a massive stud. And like Nurkic and frickin' Zach Collins would have their hands full with him. But I think with the guard play with Melo, McCollum, and Lillard, I think that they would make an interesting series just because the Lakers really have lost whatever form they'd had. And I do think the guard issue is a problem. Because if they really struggle with guard play against the backcourt, LeBron's going to have to, I think, put a lot of weight on his shoulders that he didn't plan on having to do for the first round.
Sure. I mean, as far as lost all their mojo, I don't know about all that.
No, it's just they're not looking like a one seed.
Right, sure. They are the one seed, but you're right. Because that is – we knew it would. We assumed it would take the Clipper or the Lakers longer than the Clippers because most of the role players all played with each other already. It was just, you know, Leonard is. You can plug in Leonard and he's not a guy that, you know, he either won't have the bar for a little bit and be okay with it and do a lot of other stuff without it, or he'll have the ball and it won't be even a huge play. He'll just be like, I'm gonna slowly kind of go over here. And then just put up a clean shot and goes in. You know what I mean? Just no matter, he just makes a great decision, sure. Time in and time out. But so we figured that now as the season went on, it didn't necessarily play out that way. Now the Clippers did have some, you know, not all the bodies in the lineup at all times. I think you could say that for the Lakers. But like you said, down the stretch, it was a Friday Milwaukee win and I think a Sunday Clippers win. In March, and it was like, okay, dude, this is the squad. Like, this, they are looking damn good. Two huge wins over the top two teams that have a chance to beat them, you know, at the time. So you're right. It'll be interesting. And, you know, Bradley, a guy that can defend and shoot threes. You don't have to run a bunch of plays for him. Rondo is very hit or miss from the three, but he's still a damn good, you know, solid player. And obviously can pass his ass off. Now, I think Rondo sounds like he will come back, but who knows exactly what it's going to be like when he comes back. That's just speculation on how he's going to look. You never really know until we get to that point. But still, Rondo is a little – I think you need less of Rondo when you got Braun, because Braun's all-purpose too, except he's just better than Rondo, obviously. Whereas Bradley could sit there and just be like, I'm going to sit on this three-point line on offense, and I'm going to shoot it, and I can shoot better than Rondo. So I do think that there is something to be said about that. You know, you could look at that Denver game, and they looked pretty damn good in that Denver game a couple of days back. But there was some also some games where they didn't look good at all. And now, sure, when maybe one of those games, Braun played 15 minutes or even 30, where if he played an extra 8, they could have won. Or, you know, we could play that game all in all. But, I mean, in the end, does this really define what we're going to see in the playoffs? These stretch of games since July 30th until now, are we making too big of a deal of this? I don't know. I'm kind of in flux, because it's not like the Clippers has always looked good either, per se. But, you know, that Denver game, well, actually, it's funny, because the Lakers and the Clippers, that was like a key game against Denver. You know, just because Denver's damn good. And we talked about how Michael Porter is like, hey, remember me and my back issues? Yeah, I'm the shit. I'm happy for him, by the way. We talked about him on the College Ball Show a lot that year for Missouri. So in the end, I mean, it's pure speculation, but how much weight do we actually put on these games? And are we kind of fooling ourselves a little bit, much like we do for the first month or two of a season, or the first month, you know, even in other sports like the NFL or a baseball team that gets, you know, hot for the first month and a half? Are we putting too much weight on this? And is Bill Simmons nuts saying 7 or 10 teams now have just as good a chance as all of them rather than the 3 going in? What would you put that number past 3 on now, I guess?
I'll answer both. I'll wrap up the Portland thing first. Now, again, Lakers got to be favored, and if it comes down to it, LeBron's going to do his king-like stuff and get it done, but I definitely would think that the Portland would win a couple of games. And again, I say that because, you know, as you mentioned, what kind of team will the Lakers be? Well, the only thing, and I'm not a sabermetrics guy, but if they were the only team to really show offensive regression, that is a little bit of a red flag. Like, again, LeBron can turn it on, but why are you the only team in the bubble? And you can't tell me, you know, you didn't care about your seeding, because a lot of teams have been locked in. But why are you the only squad that showed a massive regression? That something isn't quite clicking. Now, again, could that turn on? Yeah, but that is a reason for some minor fear. And they
and what was it, 2 games into these games, they won, they clinched, right?
Yeah, you know. That's true, but you know, a lot of other teams have been set up too, and their offenses haven't, you know, downgraded. So it's just something appears to be off, and it could be their guard play. And then you get point guard LeBron for the whole playoffs, and again, that's shown that it's worked. But I wouldn't be as confident. And again, I just think that Portland wouldn't get swept. They Lillard and McCollum and Melo have become such a guard playing group, and now that's the Lakers' kind of Achilles heel currently. It'd be a fun series. Now, again, we still have the double playing games, which is going to be super fun this weekend too. But yeah, moving on, for how many teams I could risk money on. Obviously, I think you got to consider Clippers and Lakers. Like, I don't think that's gone away, even with our speculation. LeBron is still LeBron, and Anthony Davis is still a top 5 or 6 guy in the NBA, or whatever number we want to put that at. So
what about Milwaukee too? I mean, well, they haven't necessarily looked great either.
No, they've actually looked pretty sluggish too. Now, again, is it that they're been mentally checked out, or, you know, or is, you know, a tense coupe going to keep headbutting people? Like, you know, I don't know.
That threw me off. It's like, Giannis, what happened? I thought you were just all smiles.
Well, you know, so if you're allowed to bring some Instagram models into the bubble, I think that might help get rid of some stress. But I think it'd be really stupid to count them out. So those are 3 right there. And again, I haven't watched them play much all year, but from watching what I've seen, I got to put Toronto as a team that could win the title. I mean, they've probably been the best team in the bubble in the East. Now, does that mean that they can knock out everyone? No, but like, dude, Toronto is playing super good defense. And even though Kawhi's gone, I think that that Nurse has done a good job putting those pieces together. So I put Toronto in my list. So that bumps it up to four. And I
what about Denver?
I don't think they can. I think they'd be struggling. Now, I'm not sure if the injuries they've had have been like people resting for the future.
Right.
Or if they're really just jacked up. Because, I mean, you've had games where Denver started two out of their regular season five starters. So if you're missing three legit starters the first round of your playoffs, you all of a sudden got your hands full with a team like Utah or Houston or whoever, you know. So I think that makes that pretty tough. The only other team I could maybe see, because I think the East is Milwaukee and Toronto. I think Miami has the pieces to win a title. Like they're a team that's eight or nine deep with a great coach and a really good defense and a great three-point shooter. So I'd put Miami on the fringe. And even though I wouldn't personally bet this, maybe in a year like this where Houston's gone complete small ball, maybe they could sneak to the finals. And if you can make it to the finals, you have a chance to win it. Like, again, I wouldn't bet them to win a title, but if you get there, you have a chance. And I do think that since D'Antoni's gone completely small ball and he just runs five wide and they've literally won a lot of games this year against in the bubble that people didn't expect, I don't think they'd be crazy. So I would put Miami, Houston, and on the fringe, and throw in Toronto with the other top three. So I guess I would say four with two on the fringe, Chris.
All right. So you don't think 10, though. So at least we can agree.
Six would be my biggest confident bet without completely throwing away money.
Right. And that doesn't really sound that confident. but without throwing away money, it's like, well, okay. But I hear you. I did see on The Athletic that the all-bubble team, first team Lillard, Booker, Harden, Luka, Warren from Indiana, TJ Warren, he has been playing good, and then Van Fleet on the second team, Van Fleet, Derek White from San Antonio, Porter, Tatum, and, of course, Kawhi.
Let me ask you before we move, is there any team you would add on to the six I'd mentioned that you would even say is a fringe title team to go with Miami and Houston?
I guess we're just leaving Boston alone because they have been kind of up and down a little bit. So I guess Boston and I still think Denver. I think you made a great point about Denver. But, man, if they can keep up with this Porter play, it's like – and what's his toe has lost a lot of weight. But you're right. They do have some concerns injury-wise in that – and it. Are they playing? I think you broke that down perfectly. Like, are they playing their cards correctly? Or did they actually want to get some run with these guys and they just haven't been able to because of injury? And why don't we start by breaking some of this stuff down with an injury and a first round matchup? Now, Russell Westbrook, and this is something that came out a couple hours ago, is expected to miss part of the Rockets' first-round series because of a strained right quad muscle. His return will depend on how he responds to the treatment. You could say anything you want about Harden on defense, but this guy offensively has just been silly. Here's actually a stat thrown around. James Harden. Oh, what the hell? Getting this weird ass. Something happened on my phone real quick. What do you think about that? I mean, does that change your mind a little bit about what you were talking about, Houston and stuff like that? I mean, I'm not saying Westbrook's done. Oh, here it is. James Harden now has 285 30-point games since joining the Rockets in 2012. That's 101 more 30-point games than any other player in that span. Now, he holds the ball a lot. I understand some of that. I get some of that. But with 42 points through the end of regulation versus the Mavericks not long ago there, James Harden had become the fourth player in the history to record 20 40-point games in multiple seasons. Wilt Chamberlain, Jordan and Elgin Baylor. I got some other stats I'll get to in a second, but just looking up at this first round matchup, obviously that plays into it. Oklahoma City 4, Houston 5. It doesn't really matter, obviously, with that, but they got the same exact schedule, you know, record right now, 44-27. But how crazy is it that they got Westbrook and they got Paul, among other things, obviously. You know, there's more to that trade, but that's, you know, in essence what it was. As far as the big players, how crazy is it? And I know Houston, you know, made a trade and they did have some injuries, and so that plays into it, but it definitely plays into it. But isn't it kind of just crazy that OK City is right there with Houston, even though this trade went down like that, dude?
Yeah, and I've never been an OKC fan, but I think you
Well,
gotta...
not never.
All right, well, not of late. Right. But I think you got to give Donovan credit, because I think they're like projected win loss total in Vegas when we were planning on having like a regular NBA season. I think their expected win total was maybe like 30 games around there, because people, oh, you got Chris Paul, you got some pieces, and that's it.
That's crazy.
I guarantee it wasn't much higher, maybe 32 max, if even. And they've won 44 games now. We're not even going to play a full season. So Donovan's done a hell of a job. Obviously, Chris Paul has still managed to play pretty damn good basketball, be a good leader, hit his regular mid-range jumper. I mean, Steven Adams has been a force. Like that, I think what they've done has been really surprising. And to top it off, you're looking at a four seed. I think that when the season started, you could have legit said, oh, yeah, I could see Clippers at 7 or 8. But unless you're maybe a diehard Thunder fan, I don't think you saw them being a four seed. So unless, you know, some craziness happens, which it looks like they're probably going to play each other, that should be a pretty fun series. Again, I think that obviously losing Westbrook for the start of it definitely hurts Houston. And I think that if you're a Thunder fan, it really goes into the strategy of, you know, are you going to rely on Steven Adams to try to kill the team down low, Chris? Or are you going to try to run and gun with Houston? You know, because the one thing I'll say about it is, like, they play their style. Like, because there's been that game where they came back against Dallas and they came back against their team the next game. Like, they don't give a shit. Like, they're going to start their five guys who are smaller, and they're going to run up and down. And if they get down 10 points, they hit a couple threes in a row, it's a tied game again. You know, like, I don't think they're going to budge. So I'd be really curious to see Oklahoma City, who obviously their go-to guy is Paul, but he's not really a guy that's going to drop 35 a game on you anymore.
Right.
You know, is
and
Oklahoma
if he does,
City,
he'll be sore the next game or something.
Yeah. Like, are they going to focus on Adams killing people down low and using the post, or are they just going to try to run and gun with them? Because, you know, I mean, I know that they've had a nice year, but if you're Houston, you're like, okay, well, if we let Adams do his thing, who on the Thunder is going to, like, you know, light us up? Like, is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Terrence Ferguson going to outshoot Houston for a series? Probably not. Again, with those names being the names I mentioned after Chris Paul, you really do have to compliment Billy Donovan, because when Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Gallinari and Ferguson have got you to a four seed this year, Chris, I think that's pretty damn good. I'm just not sure if those names, especially in the matchup against Houston, can contend in a literally up and down track meet.
Yeah, I mean, they do have like a variety of scorers, no doubt about it. I mean, they got like three guys or whatever that can score, or four guys that could maybe give you 20. I wouldn't put Adams in that category. And like you said, Ferguson is has been, you know, looking pretty good or whatever too. But yeah, I mean, I like Houston much like it sounds like you do as well. But the only thing that's holding me back to say, oh, you know, five games or something like that is obviously Westbrook, but they can get him back in time to still win the series, but maybe that would push it to a 6 or 7. You know what I mean? That's kind of what I feel like is going to happen, actually.
Yeah. I think with the way Houston plays and they don't budge from it, I just don't think Oklahoma City is a team that could slow them down enough. You know, again, crazy things have happened, but
yeah.
And you know, it's crazy though. And then we can move on to the next one, but how like sabermetrics has really changed. Cause I'm sure from a Houston perspective, just the way they do their numbers, like they could say, you know what, let Adams score 30 game in the post, let him get layups and rebounds. Like we're shooting 63s a game. So if we give up a guy killing us in the post sabermetrically, like that odds are in our favor. I mean, people never really thought of things that way, but it's come down to that point now in basketball. We're fine. You can use the post against us. We're going to jack up more threes and even make more. So game on, which was a strategy that we would not have talked about even 5 or 6 years ago in reality, I would say.
Yeah, especially like maybe a particular matchup randomly we talk about that, or even like, well, we'll let Shaq get his, but we got to contain the rest of the squad or something like that. But yeah, you're right. It is kind of, and that's what's kind of fun about these matchups. And even during the season when they said, screw it, let's go small ball, I get it. I got it. I said, you know what? That does make sense. You might as well just go all the way. And they did acquire some players that fit in that system like that. Obviously, one being a former Timberwolf and Philadelphia 76er. So we're on board there. Now, Denver in Utah. Denver, the 3 seed. Utah, the 6 seed. And really, you know, from the 3rd to basically the 7th, there's only a 4-game gap and 2.5 game gap from 3rd to 6th. Once again, God, you look at some of the experience that Utah has on their roster, some success they've had, but they've been kind of treading water this year a little bit. They got off to a weird start, looked like they got it going back. Obviously, you know, they're the team that stands out when you think COVID because of the big man and they, you know, the big man and their star, you know, Gilbert touching all the mics, which was still kind of like, what are you doing, dude? And now you look at it, you're like, oh my God. Well, actually, it didn't take you to say now you look at it. But they have a lot of experience. In this bubble year with no traveling, but really the home crowd and all that, could they come up and snake bite a team that I actually touted a little bit with the, you know, with Porter especially? Could they sneak up and take advantage of maybe some of those bumps and bruises that Denver seems to be experiencing?
The only thing I've heard from like 15 different people, whether it be podcast, ESPN, NBA TV, like everyone says that not having Bogdanovich is like what's going to keep them from being successful in the playoffs. Because from the games I've seen of them, it seems like Donovan Mitchell has to pretty much kind of carry the load offensively. Because obviously Gobert is a defensive guy and not really an offensive threat. I mean, he'll get his alley-oops and stuff, and he's there for blocking shots. But, and I don't really watch Jazz much, but I guess can Conley and Donovan Mitchell outscore the Nuggets? I guess that's definitely a maybe. I've just heard almost every NBA person like say, well, they don't have Bogdanovich, so they're not going to be able to score enough points. That's my take, Chris. Just I've heard everyone say that. I don't know the Jazz enough. I do know that Donovan Mitchell can win you some games on his own. And yeah, come playoff time, Mike Conley is a pretty tough ass dude. Like he's gonna do his, you know, grit and grind from Memphis thing. Like I don't think that those guys are a joke. It's just I think they're missing that scoring piece that Bogdanovich offered, and maybe that's something they can't quite replace.
Yeah, I mean, that actually is the biggest key to it, I'd have to say, no doubt. I totally agree with you on that one.
And yeah, and if you're Denver, does Denver, all these guys have been out for the bubble, are they coming back? Or are these injuries that, like, well, shit, dude, like, you're not going to be playing at all, so, like, we're going to have to go on without you. Like, I don't think many people have said there are season-ending injuries because the guys probably would never come to the bubble then. So maybe we're looking at a Denver starting lineup that was similar to the regular season compared to a Denver starting lineup in the bubble where you had guys who were bench players the whole year starting, you know. So I think it would be really interesting to see the Denver injury chart if you were to make a serious bet on this to see, like, okay, who's actually going to play? Obviously, Porter, as you said, stepped up and done a hell of a job. But how many there? How deep will Denver be this playoff run? Could really matter on, you know, could they beat Utah in a series or not?
Yeah. So who do you think is going to get it done?
I mean, I guess from how I've kind of talked out to myself and from the injuries we've seen, I would have to lean Utah, just because they appear to be healthier, even with Bogdanovich out. Just because I don't know if Denver's benching three starters a game, I guess I'd lean Utah now. I probably wouldn't bet on it, but I'll take the Jazz now with Mitchell and Conley, and hopefully, you know, they could outperform Denver. Hopefully, Denver doesn't get all their, you know, role players back.
And I'm just having a little bit. Okay, there we go. Something was up with the Skype. It was having some kind of weird ass. Okay, we're good to go. We're good to go. Sorry about that. Man. This is really one of those, like, I know I just brought up Denver on that. This is in between here for me so much, man, because the experience level the last 2 years, especially in some of the, you know, big moments Utah's had, and I don't know, dude, man, I am really stuck on this one. I'm going to go the opposite. I'll say the Nuggets. I'll pick the Nuggets, and, well, I do think it'll be probably a 6 or 7 game series, though, either way. I really think that this will be something that goes on for quite a long time. All right, so we're a little opposite there, but no big deal on that. That we're kind of in between on that. Okay, so then we got the Clippers and the Mavericks. Now, obviously, you know, Luka has been doing his thing per normal, per usual, and actually, where was it? That overtime win, 36 points, 14 boards, and oh, by the way, 19. Assist. He now has a league best 17 triple doubles this season. He went on to be the youngest player in history to lead the NBA outright in triple doubles at this point of his career. Now, obviously, you know, when you could get into the league was a little bit different. If you look at Oscar Robertson, even look at Jason Kidd, and you look at Magic Johnson, they could have gotten in there earlier, but coming off of college and coming off of pro European basketball, which gets you ready to go, like, to be ready that first year and second year, you actually could probably say the European League, if you played in there since you were 16, 17, 18, if you've been playing pro ball for that whole time, because you're focused 100% on basketball. And we've seen that. I remember when Rubio came over here, he was ready to go. He didn't need much time. Obviously, Luka is a step up from that. But there is something to be said about closing games. And there is a stat. The Mavs are now 2-11 in games decided by 3 points or less. That's the most losses in those situations in the league. Now, you can tweak that stat a little bit, Marshall, and say, well, they just won, you know, a couple of four-point games and that, you know, so it is what it is. Obviously, the three-point usually means someone had a chance to win it really close down, like all the way down to the buzzer. Usually, that's how that works. But, you know, it's hard to – I don't know. It just seems like Dallas is such a juggernaut on offense that they can cause some problems. But then again, they're going against the Clippers, and who's a pretty damn good defensive, you know, team, obviously. Not as good as maybe you think, numbers-wise, but some of that can be skewed because, hey, they're 6-4 in the bubble too. So they're not – or I think a little less, actually, but – they haven't played great, but then again, you know, they needed to get Lou Williams back. And so they had people in and out of the lineup. I thought that they performed really well in that Denver game, like I mentioned. Do you think, what, a five-game series? Or do you think it could go 6 or 7? Because I'm assuming you got the Clippers like everybody else.
Yeah, I just, from what I've seen from Denver in the bubble, I just don't see who your guy is on Denver's defense to shut down a star player. Like when it was Denver, you know, facing Phoenix, like no one seemed to guard Booker. When it was Denver and Houston, who was going to guard, or sorry, when it was Dallas and Houston, no one was really going to guard Harden, you know. So who's going to guard Kawhi on Dallas? It's going to be your lockdown on Kawhi. And, you know, who, and I still think Kawhi's probably step up on Paul George, but even so, who's going to be the guy to, you know, lock down on Paul George? Or, you know, they don't have a defensive stopper, which I think if you want to be a legit team in the NBA, you need it. That's why I freaking always loved Iguodala. Cause when we really needed when we were facing a tough offensive star for Golden State, Iguodala would pretty much do all he can to not shut him down, but at least limit the guy. And I don't think Dallas has that. I mean, Luka's could score you 40 a game, but even he himself is not a great defender. So if you don't have a star defender and you're going up against Paul George, Kawhi, and a bunch of, you know, suitable players like Lou Williams and, you know, their other bench guys, like I just don't see how you can win games. Maybe, you know, you could get really hot from three and steal one with them offensively, Chris. But as the series goes, you need a stopper. And I'm surprised they don't have it. But obviously that's something you can get through free agency or team growth or something. But unless I'm missing a guy, you know, you could tell me about, I don't see how the hell they beat a team who has a defensive stopper in Kawhi when the times needs to be done.
Well, there's a kid from Croatia. No, I'm just kidding. you're right. And like I said, I really feel like they'll get one game because they'll just be too fucking dominant on offense. They're one of the best off, you know, statistically speaking, one of the best offenses of all time. They have really found a group. Porzingis has really had a good bounce, great bounce back year. And he's really tightened up even of late. So I agree with you there. And then we already kind of talked about this. Are the Lakers going to lose the series? Are they going to get beat in the first round? By the way, if that happened, LeBron would never be able to hold that down. Oh my God! Could you imagine? The internet would break, dude. We wouldn't ever be able to record anything else because the internet would break and it just wouldn't work.
And I mean, Lillard could average like 52 in the series and like LeBron could get no help. Yeah. I mean, I do think that Lillard has the best chance. I think Memphis is limping in. They did officially win today, I believe, as Phoenix did too. So if Portland wins, it's a Portland Memphis head to head playing game. Memphis is going to have to beat Portland twice in a row.
Because they were in the best shape, right? They were the eighth coming in. Was it Memphis?
Yeah. Yep. But they went 2-6 in the bubble. And mm-hmm. and again, I'm a Memphis guy, but they lost Jaren Jackson III.
Yeah, that was key.
And Tyus Jones is their main off-the-bench guard, and he never even made the bubble. So Memphis has just not been that good. Now, again, would I have favored them over the Lakers? They're healthy, no. But, I mean, there was a time during this year where, I mean, you know, Ja Morant's having the flashy dunks and Jaren Jackson Jr. actually is a pretty damn good ball player. Like they were looking pretty good. They come in the bubble, they lose the guy, they lose a couple of tough games. All of a sudden now they're looking pretty. Yeah. So I honestly kind of hope that Memphis is in no matter what now. So yeah, if Portland lost, it'd be Phoenix. Anyways. Yeah. So I think Portland has the best chance. So Portland could do it. Lillard could have a sixth series, so could, you know, McCollum, so could Carmelo, and they could win in seven, but it would be really hard to do because LeBron's going to do all he can. Anthony Davis, like, as much as I favor the Portland guards, you still got to – Nurkic ain't going to shut down Anthony Davis, and Lillard and McCollum can't guard LeBron. So
right, like when you said, well, I suppose LeBron could get no help. It's like no help from anybody else besides Davis because he's going to get plenty of help from him.
Sure, yeah, and they just as much of a mismatch as they would. It's just really cool to see what Lillard's done. I forget what ESPN person it was, but it was actually a really great statement. And it was the fact, you know, I know Lillard may not win an MVP because of how basketball is now, but I mean, the dude, it's almost like what more can he have done to win one? Like if it wasn't for LeBron or the Greek Freak, like Lillard is just slightly at the wrong time. Because if not, yeah, for
we
those
can't
guys.
Say defense either, you know, because Nash won back-to-back MVP. So we can't say, well, if he just played better defense, because that's just not true, you know.
Yeah, and Lillard's defense isn't star-studded, but it's not Ole Harden. Yeah, it's not great. But the dude offensively has just had about a long run of great play. But yeah, so yeah, that describes that. Now, as we shift over to the East, where there's no play-in game, because the Magic.
Let's pick up the pace, too, by the way.
Yeah. All right, so Magic and Bucks, even though Milwaukee's looked a little sluggish, I don't see Orlando beating them. Maybe they win a game, but I'd say Milwaukee in 4 or 5. Any issues with that?
No, I think you're good.
Okay.
I did see a couple games, like chunks of it, but then they kind of leveled off, and I think they've been playing like 500 balls. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Toronto, I think Toronto has been the best-looking team in the bubble. I think they've found their flow. And I think that Brooklyn is just – now, if you have next year with KD, Kyrie, and Joe Harris, like a full team, like maybe. But
and that's what people were talking about too. Like, oh, shit, the Nets are going to make a run because they're getting everybody back, you know?
Yeah, but I don't see it happening this year. Again, maybe Toronto slips up for one. But, again, I would say Toronto confidently in 4 or 5.
I don't think it's sweet, but I got Toronto for sure. Maybe 5, 6. You never know.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, now
kudos to Toronto, dude. I mean, Jesus, no Kawhi and you come back. They're just a good all around team, dude. They got players. They got shooters. I mean, go ahead. Sorry, I just had to say that again.
No. And they got a bench. They do. Okay. Now the two series are worth bringing down a little bit. I'm more excited for Miami and Indiana, so I'll save that one for last. Let's go Boston, Philly. I think from an injury standpoint, you know, Philly is obviously losing Ben Simmons. Embiid rolled his ankle there a little bit. I don't think that's going to really affect him overall. But
on his wrist, too. He had an x-ray on his wrist, and nothing happened. Like, it didn't break, but it could be sore.
Oh, okay. So Embiid's not at 100%. So, you know, you have a Philly team that's obviously losing Simmons hurts, despite whether he was their point guard, their new power forward. You know, they got that Melton guy. You know, like they're not quite 100%. And you're facing the Boston team, which, as you mentioned, on paper is still pretty loaded because you have Tatum, Gordon Hayward's getting back into a form where maybe that's Utah days, but Gordon Hayward's probably playing as good as he has been since the trade over. You know, a lot of people love Jaylen Brown. Kemba took time off to get healthy. I think just from the way I've talked it out, I think you'd have to favor Boston just because they appear to be more healthy and have more talent. And even though Simmons wasn't the best scorer, he was obviously a very incredible defensive player. I don't know. I know Philly was, again, they're mixing up the rotation. They get injuries. Defensively, they've been super, super bad in the bubble. Like, holy shit bad. So I got to lean Celtics. Anything we're missing on that? Just the defensive issues and injuries, that's really hard to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, we could say whatever we want about Simmons offensively shooting, or just shooting, I should say, because offensively the guy does put up numbers as far as all-purpose numbers, too.
Sure.
And he can defend. He can defend. Yes. He's a long, lanky dude, and we know Embiid can, too. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think Boston – I'd say I'm actually, without Simmons and maybe a banged up Embiid, I don't know. Maybe that is a 4 or 5, whereas before I thought it'd be a lot longer series, of course.
And that leaves us with Miami-Indiana. I think Miami, again, they're my fringe make the finals team. They got, obviously, Jimmy Butler in playoff mode last year, almost upset Toronto, the team we've been giving a lot of praise to. He obviously he had some help in Philly, but that dude really had some alpha moments in the playoffs. So you have Butler, you have Duncan Robinson, who is probably the best 3-point shooter this year besides Clay and Steph. Adebayo from the Heat has like a good kind of standout year. Like the Heat got people, they got Iggy, they got Dragic.
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty well ran team. And you know you're going against the Pacers, who have T.J. Warren, who decided to become a LeBron in the bubble. And you have Oladipo, who's, again, been nursing injuries. I know Miami beat them all 3 games in the regular season. maybe TJ Warren steals one. But I do think we're looking at, which should be a pretty fun, Miami and Milwaukee series. Anything you think Indiana could do, Chris, to find a way to upset a more talented, more veteran Heat team?
Well, I know TJ Warren is not going to have, he shouldn't be soft, is what I believe Butler called him back earlier this year when he got thrown out of that game. I mean, this is basically chalk. A lot of this has been, my picks were chalk, almost, which can happen in the NBA, but hopefully we get surprises. But yeah, I'm with you. I think they're going to put it all together. Like you said, the Pacers are, I think they were like 7-3 or something like that in the last 10. And Warren has been playing damn good. And they do have some ballers. But yeah, I favor Miami as well. And it's just Butler leading that squad. And yeah, because like you said, even last year, I mean, Toronto with that freaking fadeaway shot that bounced off the rim. And you know what I mean? That was a fun moment for Toronto in general. But, yeah, Butler, I do like the squad. I like the squad for the next couple of years, and they got cap room, too, from Miami. But I like them in the first round.
Yeah, and then I think them and Milwaukee actually could be a really fun series. Last question I'd say, obviously I'll say this for my last point as I was stumbling there, what I meant to say. We have been used to in the NBA playoffs where if you lose your first two games on the road, you come home to that special game three home cooking. Maybe there's a little bit of a disadvantage for a road team, or I should say an underdog team in the playoffs, because you don't get that kind of boost when you're down. Or maybe you could say it levels it out because the home team doesn't get their crowd. Do you think that the not having crowds in the playoffs changes much, or does it kind of make it an even floor due to the fact that everyone's only playing with the Zoom fans and that's it?
I think it does. I think it does even stuff out a little bit more, or at least pushes towards that, because, you know, there's no, like, it's just no way you can deny you rallying behind a crowd, or the silencing of a crowd as well. And being the home team, getting your ass kicked at home in the playoffs, and just thinking about hanging out with Harden, you know, at a club after the playoffs are out. Like, I just think that, you know, yeah, I think it makes a difference, and I hate to fast forward, but I think the biggest difference will be that L.A. series, because watching the Clipper-Laker games and watching the Clipper home games, it was like 30% Lakers fans. So I think that actually will be the series, as long as we get there, obviously, that will be the biggest difference. Not the difference of who wins or loses. But as far as a crowd difference, I think that would be one you could point to and say, hey, that does make a difference. But in general, I think it does make somewhat of a difference. I mean, you can't deny some of this home crowd stuff. You know, we talk about it all the time. Sometimes that's what we pick the series for, because it's so tight, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, again, kind of taking a shot at Philly again on this, but a truthful stat fact, like, their defensive numbers on the road compared at home, it was almost like a 12 or 13 point difference. So clearly they're a team that had their home crowd to boost them for defensive energy. And now you're at a bubble where you have no Philly fans supporting you and their numbers have skyrocketed. So, and kind of like what I was mentioning, like when we first started talking about this going into this bubble, like Golden State, like they're one of those teams who's always had a really awesome home court advantage. So it maybe does, as you said, harm a couple of teams who had like really awesome home crowds. But again, fair is fair. They're all in the same place. They're all chilling in the same bubble. It sounds like from the previews, the West should be a little more entertaining. NBA is the opposite of hockey, where hockey, you can almost pick any first round upset and not be called a fool. If Toronto, Milwaukee, Clippers, or Lakers lose in the first round, a lot of people are going to be getting called fools for not seeing it happen, you know. But yeah, it should be a lot of chalk. But all the second round games in the East and the West, I wouldn't call them much chalk. I think we're going to have a pretty loaded second round with some high caliber basketball, Chris.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, the veteran team, the older players, I think they're going to be not just fresh because of the break, but because of the schedule, not traveling, always getting a day off in between. I think that'll make a big difference. And I think that'll make a big difference for the actual, like, the product on the floor. I really do think it'll make a slight difference. I shouldn't say big difference. Why don't you get us out of here, sir?
Well, like I said, tonight, Portland's playing to get the 8 seed. Phoenix, I believe, technically has been disqualified because Memphis won. So we're looking at probably going to be having a Portland versus Memphis. I believe it's Saturday, Sunday. You got to kind of play win to get in. So Portland, if Portland wins tonight versus the Nets, which we believe they will, Memphis will have to beat them twice. And without their players, I don't think they will. But nonetheless, it's still kind of a new fun style of basketball. I believe that's something the NBA could adapt if they could maybe give an extra week in the schedule, have it to where every time for the playoffs from now on, you have the 8 to 9, work hard to get in. I think that's
Ask that question. I'm glad you brought that up at the end.
It's an extra little fun. Again, you're not really hurt. There's not really an injury risk. You're right. Literally you just have to let that team, whoever wins 8, 9 seed, let them start their round versus the one seed, like an extra day of rest. Let them start a day later. But you're adding a product, which is super fun to watch. And let's say Memphis does pull off a win against Portland. Okay, now are they really going to find a way to beat Lillard again? Like, that'd be some pretty cool ratings. That's kind of a different angle of TV viewership that Silver could, you know, add to his platform. Which, again, in any games like that for NBA fans, it's TV viewing. It's new. A new idea, it can't hurt. So we'll have that coming up. So yeah, until then, we will be doing a show as the playoffs go on. Again, first round should be chalk, but if an upset happens, we will gladly be here to discuss it. Until then, be safe, stay at home, watch sports, wear a mask. The boys are out. Peace.